Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The weeks between Thanksgiving and the New Year can be a time of joy and celebration with family and friends. But for many, the most wonderful time of the year also means stress, family tensions, and anxiety. With the price of groceries still high and the recent government shutdown causing disruption to SNAP benefits, financial pressures are heightened as well. Joining us to talk about the stress some of us may be feeling right now and how to deal with it, we have Lois Stepney, an assistant clinical professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. Thanks for joining us, Lois.
Thank you.
And also with us, we have Maggie Hallett, Associate Director of Mental Health America of Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Maggie.
Thank you.
So I wanted to first start with financial stress. You know, prices have increased, turkeys cost more, groceries cost more. Lois, let's start with you. What type of pressure does that put on someone who's expected to put a beautiful meal on the table, but everything costs more?
Oh, so much pressure. And what we also know during this time of year is there's a gendered pressure. So especially for those who may be of female-headed households or just in their family dynamic, they are the cook, they're the organizer, they're the party planner. They're the ones that oftentimes are feeling the pressure in a way that perhaps other family members are not. And so it's very real and it can feel overwhelming. And that role often comes with a desire to create a dinner, create an opportunity for that family connectedness. So sometimes the financial pressure also threatens to ruin this, which adds another piece of anticipatory grief and loss even before the holiday dinners commence. So there's a lot that happens with that.
Maggie, what would you add to that about the financial pressure to put a beautiful meal on the table when things are just more expensive?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to echo Lois, it's just really real. Maybe one silver lining is that it's something that everybody's agreeing on these days. And everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people are feeling. So I would hope that there's some understanding that comes with Thanksgiving maybe needing to look different than it has in years past, where the table might not be quite as full as it has been. But since this is impacting so many people, you know, maybe there's a level of understanding. Or for the ones that it isn't impacting as hard, you hope they step up a little bit, maybe offer to do a little bit more.
Bring an extra side dish.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So plus with the government shutdown that happened recently, that brought out the reliance that a lot of people have on SNAP benefits. It brought it to the front of minds of many how important SNAP benefits are. So I feel like we have a better understanding of how some people just don't have enough money to put a lot of food on the table. What does that type of stress, Maggie, do to one's mind and body whenever you have to worry about something as essential as food?
I mean, it becomes your sole focus, you know, when you consider, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, it's the very basis of food and shelter and safety. And so everything else kind of falls to the wayside when it becomes almost survival based. And so, you know, what you hope is that what just happened with so many people and the scare and the reality of not being able to put food on the table, that that not just those people, but the people who love them, the people who see them, the people who serve them are also realizing it and, again, willing to support and help where they can.
Yeah. Lois, tell me more about how the reliance on SNAP benefits kind of came to light more, you know, in the weeks of the government shutdown.
I think you put it very well already, Amy, that it really magnified how many of our community members, our family members, the people that perhaps if we go to temple or to church or a synagogue or mosque that are sitting next to us that are personally impacted or were impacted, who are dependent in many ways on SNAP benefits. I have an aunt who, you know, she's put in her time. She's living on Social Security, that fixed income, and she depends on her SNAP benefits to help supplement her nourishment. And even though as a family we're very blessed and we definitely would have surrounded her, she's just one of several relatives and people in my own personal circle that, quite frankly, they have depended on SNAP as a form of independence. As adults, we get meaning from work and from being able to contribute to our families. And our family members, even if they're on SNAP, they often want to be able to bring that side to the holiday dinner, to be a part of that potluck that's happening, for example, in their church or in their community. And so this really highlighted once again a gap in an area of potential trauma for many people. Being in this country and not having the resources and means, that being in a position of living in poverty really is also a social distancer, and it comes with another set of harms. And so once again, as we became more aware of how many people were directly being impacted by this outcome, it, I think, just raised an awareness about what this means and the collective harm that this contributes in a ripple effect kind of way.
Maggie, what suggestions do you have to help someone cope with food prices? If they're worried about putting, you know, the traditional meal on the table, or if they're worried that they just can't afford it like they used to, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say go easy on yourself. Mm-hmm. Find or seek more reasonable options, you know, that are available. If you can't, you know, go to Aldi instead of Whole Foods, or if you need support, you know, the food pantries did get a lot of donations throughout this whole SNAP issue. But I would say, you know, again, ask the family members who might not be in the difficult situation, or if it's you that's unable to provide, see what else you can do to help. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you can be somebody that helps prepare versus bring the food, or offers to help with the dishes or whatever it may be. But, you know, this isn't a failure of the individual, you know, that to look at it more as go easy and what other options are there to do. Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the stresses of the holiday season with Maggie Hallett, Associate Director of Mental Health America of Ohio, and Lois Stepney, Assistant Clinical Professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. Lois, let's talk for a minute about why holidays amplify stress and anxiety. Is it the expectation? Is it being busier? Like, what are the main factors here of why this time of year feels more stressful?
Oh, Amy, I think you hit it right on the nose. There's so many expectations. And because we're in a society where, like, I don't know about you all, but how many commercials have you seen about just setting the stage for the holiday expectations, whether it is how I do celebrate Christmas, or whether it's how that Christmas tree looks, how the presents are wrapped. For Thanksgiving, I've been looking at, for example, Pinterest posts. Like, there's so much.
To set a pretty table.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So there's this, once again, it's a culturally defined kind of expectation that brings its own set of pressures and sometimes joys, because some of us really thrive in being a part of that and that energy. And some of the listeners, I'm sure, will be posting their own pictures on Pinterest or Instagram, for example, highlighting kind of the joy of the season as they have pictured, imagined it. I do think, in addition to the expectations, this is also a time where many people are dealing with the loss of a loved one. Literally, you know, the holidays this year, and maybe for several years, have been bereft of people who have been deeply loved, and the relationship has changed because they are deceased. And that sometimes the loss also is a loss of relationship. So I think of those who are single, for example, and the pressure to, are you bringing some special person to the family holiday dinner? And there are varying levels of loss and grief that people are also confronting this time of year. We're also facing January 1 will be here. And you all, I am someone that I appreciate like the potential intention of a new start. But that also brings a lot of pressure. We already know that around the holidays.
Oh, those resolutions.
Yes. So the holidays also brings up some extra just stress and strain as people are looking at wrapping up 2025 and looking forward to 2026 and the unknowns. We have an increased rate of people dealing with anxiety and depression. And this just, all these things kind of are amplified, I think, this time of year.
Maggie, what about those picture-perfect celebrations, but also coupling that with the requirement to maintain a cheerful disposition?
Yeah. I know. And social media doesn't make it any easier. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that if people listening to this conversation can take away is comparison really is the thief of joy. And when you see these perfect posts and these families that seem to have it all together or happy all the time, that can be hard when yours doesn't look like that. And also unrealistic. So I think recognizing what feels right for you, you know, appreciating what you do have, and accepting that it's okay if it doesn't look like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay if you're introverted and that feels way overwhelming, you know, that just isn't what your makeup of your family is this year. But recognizing what your joys are versus what you're seeing other people's joys, you know. Feels.
Lois, what advice do you have to lower expectations? How do we make things more realistic? Do we not look at social media? Do we skip the Pinterest?
No, that's such a great question, Amy. And I think it's one, awareness. So noticing the discomfort, noticing what's coming up for you. I appreciate the mixture of emotions. And if I'm not happy, if I'm really missing a loved one, if I'm really feeling in a very low place, that awareness that that is where I'm at and even a radical acceptance of that is a way to begin to move forward. We can't change what we don't acknowledge. We can't change what we're not aware of. And then there's also that intentionality. You've already said it, Maggie. How can we bring joy? What am I grateful for? Positive psychology has given us some strategies in terms of how we can shape our cognitions. And so in some ways, perhaps the holiday season also can help us to think about what is deeply meaningful and important. Mm-hmm. And we can tap into that, which goes beyond kind of the surface level. We are cheery and bright. Mm-hmm. So awareness and intentionality.
Okay. Yeah. Maggie, talk a little bit more about that idea of focusing on what we are thankful for rather than what's missing.
Yeah. I mean, we all have things when you look at your day that you felt good about, you know, that you felt happy about. Mm-hmm. When I think of my own nuclear family, it's small. We have one child. I'm an only child. And so, you know, our Christmas day is smaller. But when I just sit and reflect with myself, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't mind having a quiet house that morning. I'm okay with, he's a teenager now too, so it's not, you know, we're not getting woken up at 5:30 in the morning. You know,
you have to wake him up.
Right. Seriously.
Yeah. You're like, you know, there's presents down here.
Yeah. It's a whole different dynamic. But, you know, it is not going to do me any good to think about that I don't have the chaotic mornings and, you know, and appreciate that time for what it was with the 5 a.m. wake ups, but also recognize that this time offers different things to be grateful for. And, you know, I also think something that's important in thinking about, you know, having a teenager and what he brings to any situation these days is just letting people be who they are during the holidays too, you know, like, however they show up, that is the best gift you can give anybody, is just allowing them to be who they are in that moment, too.
Our guests this hour are staying with us. And listeners, we'd love for you to join the conversation. Do you have a question about dealing with some holiday stress? Or do you want to offer some advice that you have had that has worked for you over the years? You can join us. You can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Or you can give us a call right now, 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. And we're going to continue this conversation by talking about family dynamics, everything from unresolved conflict to politics. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Research shows that about 41% of Americans experience increased stress during the holidays. If you find yourself dreading family gatherings or feeling anxious about holiday obligations, you're not alone. This hour, we're talking about how to cope with the pressures of the holiday season. And with us today, we have Maggie Hallett, Associate Director of Mental Health America of Ohio. Thanks for being here, Maggie.
Thank you.
And Lois Stepney, an Assistant Clinical Professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Amy.
And listeners, we'd love for you to join the conversation. Do you have any questions about dealing with holiday stress, or do you have some advice to offer? Email us at allsides@wosu.org or call us at 614-292-8513. That statistic I gave, I found a news article that said research shows 41% of Americans experience increased stress during the holidays. And I thought, oh, what a bunch of liars. How is it only 41%? I mean, I would think it is in reality at least closer to 100, right? Yeah, you're laughing
it
at me.
It feels so but universal, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it? Don't you think it feels universal? Yeah. All right. So holiday gatherings often mean spending time with extended family, people we only see at the holidays. Mm-hmm. And this can sometimes result in happy reunions or revealing complicated relationships. So, Lois, what can we do whenever a problem arises due to forced proximity?
Such a relatable question.
Yeah.
I think it's so important that this is kind of like a before the gathering, as much as possible. And it's really hard this time of year for individuals to knowing themselves, once again, that awareness, like, have I eaten today? Am I walking into this hangry? Knowing that Aunt Sarah is going to take 2 hours before her charcuterie board is ready. Like, like, what is it that I can do to kind of minimize my own stress, my own sense of overwhelm? How can I show up present, ready to engage? And also recognizing that Aunt Sarah, whoever that historical conflict has been, or those family members that we continue to have like challenges, or just you don't know what someone's going to say and how that can set up a reaction. Like, we can't control other people. And I think that sometimes we want to control other people, including our own children. That's not real. So reminding ourselves as well of, I'm going to stay in my lane, let people be them, and also set boundaries. So if I would really appreciate that the family not call me by my nickname, this is not my actual nickname, but if I had been given a nickname by the family that I've outgrown, so I think of a nephew who was really kind of like outgrew the nickname, and they had to assert themselves, like, can you please not call me this? There are times that I think we have to encourage people to set their own boundaries so they can have as healthy an engagement as possible in those family gatherings that otherwise perhaps they would not choose to engage with those loved ones.
And Maggie, you're nodding along. Talk to me about the forced proximity and what that does to people who maybe don't have a relationship where they only see each other during the holidays.
Yeah. I mean, I think agreeing with Lois, preparation is key. You usually know enough to know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And so just thinking about, you know, trying to keep your nervous system at rest or at ease, and not, you know, you don't have to participate in every conversation you're invited into.
There's great ways to pivot at the holidays.
Exactly.
There's always something that needs checked on in the kitchen.
Right. And 100 things to talk about that's happening in the moment, yes. You know, that you don't have to go down that road that you've been down so many times and no resolution is ever found, you know. So I think setting boundaries is really tough, particularly family members. And if you don't have a lot of experience with it, you know, so trying little boundaries at first, you know, in saying like, hey, you know, we've talked about this before and we've never really gotten anywhere. So I'd rather not today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a great way to say it, to add today. I'd rather not today. But, you know, even though I know I'm not going to see you again for a whole
right.
year, we'll just add today. Yeah. I mean, I host a talk show for a living, so I'm a big fan of the pivot, right? That's what.
Yep.
Before we talk about politics, though, because that's another pivot situation, I wanted to take a call from, we have Tom in Delaware, who wanted to talk about something that happens this time of year as well. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes. I'm on my Meals on Wheels route, by the way.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Thank you for, well, thank you for doing that. What did you want to talk about, Tom?
About SAD, seasonal affective disorder, which I used to get going into Christmas, you know, old memories and so forth. People passed away. Then I started taking vitamin D, and I found that vitamin D pretty good mood, and it get away with that phenomenon.
All right, thank you so much, Tom. Okay, seasonal affective disorder, also known as SAD, right, Lois? I mean, it's a real thing, right? Yeah, very much so. I mean, people sometimes probably, you know, just say, oh, you know, it gets so dark, but they don't realize how much it affects you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, literally, we live in Columbus, Ohio, where the lovely gray persist. And so it's different than perhaps being in parts of the country where there's more sunlight and we can actually allow our skin to be exposed to sunlight and have our own bodies produce the vitamin D that we need. So when Tom talks about how vitamin D made a big difference, it just makes me think about it is a real condition. It is really something that perhaps light therapy could help. Maybe you need vitamin D supplementation. And I would really encourage folks, if they have opportunity, to also check with their providers, if they have a primary care physician, or maybe they're already seeing a counselor, to have some conversation if they're beginning to wonder if it literally is the environmental time of year being kind of fall, winter, that is triggering for them some of their sadness and depression. It's a good call out.
Yeah. Maggie, what do you think about the idea of this time of year is already stressful and then you add in the extra darkness? It doesn't help.
Right. Dark when you get up in the morning and dark when you leave work in the evening. And I mean, I think something that's important is you can dress for the weather if you want to take 10 minutes and go outside, but that will help, you know, breathing fresh air. I know it seems like get sleep, eat well, breathe fresh air, but there's a reason that we say all those things, you know, they work. So trying to just get some, you know, actual real air into your lungs, if there is sunshine into your eyes. But yeah, light therapy, vitamin D, and talking to somebody if it feels like you're not being able to get yourself out of the lows are all really important right now.
All right. And we're going to take one more call. And we have Madeline in Columbus. Madeline, thanks for calling. What did you want to talk about?
Thanks so very much for taking my call. What I wanted to plug, quite frankly, is the 12-step programs. Al-Anon Alateen Family Groups is for families and friends of alcoholic persons, and these are exquisitely stressful times for anyone who has alcoholism in the family. I'm just coming from an open AA meeting, and quite frankly, this is what they discuss at these meetings, setting boundaries, taking good care of yourself. Anyway, I just wanted to plug those because so many people think that people that go to these meetings have five heads. They don't. They're regular people. And we're just trying to live our best lives. And thanks so much for taking my call.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. And that's a great point. I mean, the holidays can also be a time whenever there's more alcohol around, there's more drinking, there's more socializing, and problems can come out. Lois, you were nodding along with this. Talk to me about both AA and then the other one is Al-Anon?
Yes, Al-Anon.
Okay.
So AA, for those who perhaps have dealt with their own substance misuse, maybe they're recognizing that, yes, I drink a bit too much and it's not healthy for me. And I'm noticing these effects in my life. Perhaps I need to join others who are working on actively reducing or even quitting their use of alcohol. It can be really hard to be dry in this season, especially if that's not been your lifestyle. We celebrate so many things with alcoholic beverages and make jokes about alcoholic adult beverages at holiday gatherings. So I think for those who possibly personally have struggled, AA groups could be very helpful. And then for the Al-Anon, that's like for those family members. So it's that spouse, it's that partner, it's that child, it's that sibling who has watched a loved one really go through the struggles of their substance use and misuse, and it has deeply affected them. And perhaps they're dealing with issues of codependency where they realize that they enable some of that behavior. It can be so complicated, and I really appreciate that caller highlighting this adds to the family dynamics, and it's another source of support where we can be, once again, with our increased awareness of what do I need. It may allow me to tap into a source that already exists and be intentional about that engagement so that I can continue to bolster, so that my family can bolster what we need to make it through this holiday season in a new way, perhaps reframing how it's been in the past and moving forward in a way that feels healthy for us.
Yeah. And Maggie, do you have any advice for someone like maybe the actual holiday gathering, sitting there at the Thanksgiving or like Christmas or, you know, Hanukkah table in the middle of dinner might not be the place of being like, you know, where I think you should go. Right. How to approach that? Maybe put a pin in it.
Yeah. I mean, I think something that everybody should know about 12-step programs is that it's peers supporting peers. It's people who have walked the walk, who've been there. And so whether that's in a 12-step program, wherever you can find somebody who has experienced what you're going through, there's such a huge benefit in getting support from those people. You know, you connect with somebody who has felt it on their own skin so much more than maybe somebody else who's trying to support you through it. And so I think, you know, definitely the holiday table isn't the time or place for that. But if people are needing support during the holidays, finding people, you know, whether it's a grief group, whether it's depression support, anxiety support, OCD. I mean, when you think about the amount of interactions and potential touch points for anxiety to show up, finding people who know what that's like. You know, whether it's all solution based or just I hear you and I understand, goes a really long way.
Lois, tell me about a grief group as opposed to like doing one-on-one counseling. What would a grief group be?
Yeah, a grief group would allow you, so I'm thinking about what Maggie's sharing in terms of, like, I'm not the only person going through this. So let's just say I have lost a partner or a spouse. Being in a group with others who are also grieving at this time of year, the loss of a life partner can be so helpful, that they're not the only one, that their tears are valid, that the places that are still holes in their heart, the place in their soul that still aches for that, like that this is understandable, and that they have space where they can in community share how they're really feeling in a culture which in many ways we don't do very well with grief and loss. Mm-hmm. So bereavement, you know, you have your partner, your life partner dies. You have 3 days possibly off from work, possibly. Mm-hmm. You know, the funeral happens maybe. Like we don't have ongoing celebrations often as a culture. So a grief group could be very healing, supportive, protective even of folks who need the validation and permission that how they're showing up is how they're showing up. And it's good enough. And they don't need to explain it away.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the stresses of the holiday season with Lois Stepney, an assistant clinical professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. And we have with us Maggie Hallett, Associate Director of Mental Health America of Ohio. Listeners, you can join us 614-292-8513 or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. And I told you I was going to pivot back to politics, and here we are. Right. So this is a time of year where politics can also come into play. What advice do you have if you have a family member coming to your house who you fundamentally disagree with? Do you suggest avoiding politics altogether? Maggie, do you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on this earlier when I said you don't have to participate in every conversation you're invited into. I think we're at a place now where we should all be recognizing that the chances of us changing somebody's mind mm-hmm. over, you know, the Thanksgiving table or mm-hmm. or whatever it is likely not going mm-hmm. to happen. Mm-hmm. We know where each other stands. Mm-hmm. And if it's not happened yet, you know, chances are it's not going to. So if it feels like a conversation to antagonize, to rile you up, you know, again, politely say like, hey, we've done this before and we didn't get very far, but, you know, do the Amy pivot and shift to one of the thousands of other things that you can talk about. Mm-hmm.
Lois, you're agreeing. Mm-hmm. What about the idea of asking open-ended questions and being curious? Does that help sometimes to have them explain it to you?
Oh, sure. It's an opportunity to build that connection as we try to understand where people are coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm a child of like the 70s, and so you all may remember Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It always stands out to me. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. So when you're asking those open-ended questions, it allows the opportunity if you're really interested in hearing. So then yeah. there's that awareness. Am I really interested in understanding where...
Well, there's some people who love engaging in a good debate. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then let's have at it. I think it goes to the awareness. Once again, is this conversation likely going to be one that I already know I'm going to be leaving here crying and upset and not ever wanting to come back and see so-and-so? Or is this going to be just the kind of exhilarating conversation I've been waiting for all year at this family gathering? But yeah, open-ended questions are great to elicit from people how they're feeling and thinking about things.
Well, so Maggie talked about the pivot. Do you feel like politics should just be avoided at family gatherings, or do you think that it's okay? Like, what's your thoughts?
Oh, so I am a conflict-averse person. Conflict happens,
yeah.
But I would be more inclined personally to say, if we already know that this has been politically, like, just if our family is kind of divided, whoever is hosting, I almost would say encourage the expectation, just like... what sides people are bringing that this Thanksgiving, and bring up the past. Like, this is once again, that awareness and that intentionality. We have not done well, you know, last year with the election, like we have not done well as a family navigating these conversations. And I really want this year for us to focus on our theme this year. I really want us to, are you on board with me? Can we try to have those conversations so that we as a family come closer together? Who's in office does not directly like, who's at our dinner table is what I really want us to focus on, is what matters. And so I think there's opportunity to maybe be direct and intentional. But if you ask me personally, yeah, we're not having those conversations. So
what about you, Maggie? Are you conflict averse?
I yes and no. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if it's going to be a productive conversation, then I want to have it. Mm-hmm. If I know at this point it's not, then I don't want to have it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if there is somebody who is going to engage fairly, openly with you, and that's something that you enjoy, for sure, then have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about holiday stress, chances are that those aren't the conversations that we're talking about. And so I think, you know, those are the ones that the pivot is important. And trying to figure out, hey, we're family here. There are things that we can connect on. There are things that we do agree on. Mm-hmm. Can we try to find those common grounds again? Mm-hmm. Can we try to find what it is that we love or even like about each other? Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Our guests are staying with us. And listeners, you can join the conversation. Do you have a question about dealing with holiday stress, or do you have some advice to offer? Email us at allsides@wosu.org or give us a call, 614-292-8255. 8513. Coming up, we're going to talk about some stress relief techniques, including self-care, exercise, time management, and more. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The weeks between Thanksgiving and the New Year can be a time of joy and celebration with family and friends. But for many, the most wonderful time of the year also means stress, family tensions, and anxiety. With the price of groceries still high, financial pressures are heightened as well. And if you find yourself dreading family gatherings or feeling anxious about a holiday obligation, you're not alone. With us to talk about holiday stress and how to cope with it, we have Lois Stepney, assistant clinical professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. Thanks again for being here, Lois.
Thank you, Amy.
And Maggie Hallett, associate director of Mental Health America of Ohio. Thanks again for being here, Maggie.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, you can join us. There's still time for you. 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to go right to Stacy and Worthington. Stacy, what did you want to add to the conversation?
If you are at a gathering and there is someone there who is trans or non-binary and you misgender them or call them by a name that is not their preferred name, just apologize quickly, move on, and try to do better. But don't put them in the position of having to make you feel better or going on and on and on about it, because that's going to make them very uncomfortable and it's not fair.
Okay. Thank you for that advice. We have a lot of nods around the table. So, yeah, I mean, that's something that especially maybe for an older family member or someone who's known someone for a long time, it can be a hard change. But how can we be understanding and compassionate? Is that the way Stacy explained it, the perfect way?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, Stacy. It's just the acknowledgement, like a mistake was made and let's move on. Like, try not to do it again, but... Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, it's, you know, I'm 75. I like just the conversations, then it amplifies the error. So I love Stacy's suggestion.
Maggie, do you have anything to add?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I think that, and this is another thing that, you know, if you're the host or family members in support of the trans family member, make sure everybody knows in advance, like, this is their preferred name. It's not hard to call them their preferred name. My name's Margaret. I asked to go by Maggie. You all can do that, you know.
That's like, a good way to put it as an example. Yeah.
All right. I wanted to take a moment to talk about more about the dealing with the stress. When do we know, Maggie, of when we can handle it ourselves and when it has gotten to a point where we actually need professional help? Sometimes this season can make you feel more and you just think to yourself, oh, I'll feel better in January. I don't need to talk to someone. I just have to make it through. But what is the tipping point that you tell people when they may need professional help?
Sure. I mean, clinically, you know, we usually the marker is like when you can't meet your kind of daily life functions. But people know themselves, you know, sometimes it doesn't get to that point and you still need to get the support. But when you find that you don't feel like yourself, you don't take the same joy in the things that you once did, you know, everything feels harder or your anxiety level is too high. I mean, one thing that we can never talk about too much is if you are having any thoughts of hurting yourself, immediately seek help. This time of the year brings up a lot of hard stuff for a lot of people. And, you know, recognizing that emotions will change, you know, how you feel will always change. But having somebody support you through it when you feel like you can't is vital. taking through this season.
And getting in to see a therapist can take a while. So if you're feeling like that, that's more of a 988 situation, right?
Absolutely.
So tell people they can text 988, they can call.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the lifeline.
Yes. And then, Lois, what do you feel is the idea of going to seek out therapy, where I just said, you know, sometimes it takes a little while to get in and get an appointment, versus this idea of finding a group? We talked about the grief group before. Mm-hmm. We talked about AA and Al-Anon. When is it that you need one-on-one versus a group might help?
Sure, that's a great question, Amy. I think this goes back to what Maggie said in terms of awareness. If I've never engaged with professional therapy, if I've not been a part of a group, then it's maybe leaning into, you know, am I an introvert that has social anxiety with groups of people? Mm-hmm. Then perhaps I need to go ahead and seek some individual support. If I am someone who thrives off of hearing other stories, especially if I'm missing a sense of community around what I'm going through, then perhaps that's an indicator to go ahead and see about a group. I think fortunately for those who do choose, like if they want that group support, oftentimes the group facilitators are very trained or are aware of when members of their collective group maybe could benefit from, it's kind of a both and, like continue coming to our group and it seems like you're really struggling with this. It may be helpful to also get some individual support right now. And sometimes also group members, even in informal groups, are also, especially if they've been there for a while, they have a good radar about when other members of the group may need some extra support. And perhaps they've been there, done that. So they also can say, like, listen, I think you'd benefit from talking to your doctor a little bit about X, Y, or Z. You know, you're saying you're not sleeping, you're not eating. These are red flags when your basics are not firing. It's not sustainable, so.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the stresses of the holiday season with Lois Stepney, assistant clinical professor at OSU in the College of Social Work. And we have Maggie Hallett, associate director of Mental Health America of Ohio. Listeners, there's a few minutes left. You could join our conversation. If you have a question about dealing with holiday stress or if you have some advice to offer, email us at allsides@wosu.org or call us 614-292-8513. I wanted to get back to this idea of self-care I mentioned earlier, how to manage the stress. You know, if we can't make the stress go away, we can figure out ways to deal with it. Maggie, what's your favorite stress relief technique?
For me, it's for sure taking a walk. The problems feel, before I walk out the door, feel, you know, 90% heavy. And I would say when I walk back in the door, I feel 60% heavy. You know, it doesn't make it go away, but I need to not have any other outside contributors. You know, I need to just be with myself. I need to be breathing fresh air. I need to be moving. You know, so that really helps me. I do think that when you can quiet the noise, you can tap into what it is that's really important. And in the holidays, that gets lost a lot because you think, like, I have all these things to do and all of these things to buy and all of this stuff to make. And and when you can get back into you, you know, get back into your center, it helps you prioritize again. You know, what of these things can I let go of? What of these things really are the most important things to me? So whatever allows you to do that, you know, whether it's meditation or yoga or walks or, you know, I think that that's the most important thing to try to find.
Lois, what's your favorite stress relief technique?
Oh, I love walking my dog. that is such a joy. It's being
having
out
a pet.
Nature.
Having a pet also helps.
Definitely helps. Yeah. So yeah, it's like free therapy. That's that. But I also really thrive on, I'd say, collective care practices. So
what's that mean?
Like, well, I'm a person who prays. I have a prayer partner. Sometimes we have other people join us to pray for things. Sometimes you just feel like that's really helpful. I appreciate in the College of Social Work, we have a meditation group. I have found, for example, doing loving kindness meditation with a group of people is very helpful to kind of extend loving kindness to the world. So there are these other opportunities that, you know, even singing in a choir, quite frankly, if you're musically inclined or maybe not so much, there are opportunities to help deal with stress with others. others, and that solidarity, and like we're all trying to do something together to help ourselves, help the world be a better place, I find to be particularly healing and helpful.
I'll share mine too. I mean, exercise is definitely one, but sometimes we just don't have a lot of time to exercise every single day. But also, I have found the Calm app to be extremely helpful. I mean, it does cost money, but I feel like it's every penny well spent. You talked about loving kindness. There's one meditator woman on there named, is it Tamara Levitt, I think? She does a loving kindness series, which, so anyway, I enjoy the Calm app. It does help.
Yes,
yeah, awesome. And they have them at different lengths too, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. There's even 3-minute ones, you know, if you don't have the time. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about dealing with stress at the holiday season. I wanted to also talk about, we mentioned the time of when you need to maybe seek professional help, right? So we talked about individual therapy. Could we talk about family counseling a little bit? Because we're talking a lot about these holiday gatherings, bringing family together. When is family counseling necessary, Lois?
Sure. When family members are finding that they cannot resolve through their efforts to communicate respectfully, that they cannot resolve issues, they keep coming back to the same issue. I will say family therapy usually is, and so correct me, Maggie, if you feel differently, but like for the immediate family. So, and that immediate family can be self-defined. Like if my second cousin, you know, lives with me or is a core part of my family, or my neighbor is part of my chosen family, like we can self-define what that is, but often family therapy is really the people who are most connected, most intimate, and there's some ongoing stress or tension. Maybe there's been a collective trauma that the family's experienced that really has caused a fissure in the relationships or major loss. I think when you're noticing that everyone has kind of been affected by an issue, that's a good time to maybe think about, should we have some outside help to help mediate, to facilitate conversation, to bring healing. That's what's on my brain.
Yeah. Maggie, what about you? With family therapy? And I was thinking more immediate family. Right. But I don't know exactly how big a family therapy session could get.
Yeah. I mean, family therapy is amazing and very unique because it's dealing with the whole system of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one person changes in that system, the system changes. But also you have to get everybody on board to want to do family therapy. And so that's hard too, when people might not be at least initially bought into it. And so with any type of therapy, if you're desiring family therapy, start with individual, you know, work with your therapist to see, is this something that could be realistic for my family? Mm-hmm. How do we get them, you know, to join me in this endeavor and find the right therapist to do it?
Before we run out of time, I read something that has stuck with me. Boundaries are not walls, right? So how do you explain that, though, to like an overbearing grandmother or uncle or aunt, that boundaries are not walls? So if you're setting a boundary and saying, I'm not coming over that day, or I can't, you know, I have to leave by 7 to get my kids to bed, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about boundaries versus walls.
Sure. I think Maggie said it earlier. It's like, we're just not going to talk about this today. Or, you know, grandma, like today, you know, the toddlers, when they don't, when they're cranky, I'm cranky. We have to leave at 7 p.m. I think it's, you know, trying to reaffirm and knowing that you can't control if that loved one insists that no. And if they're also interpreting it as a wall. So I can't, we can't change how other people perhaps take our assertion of what it is that we need and what we're trying to also, if we're parents, like the limits we're trying to establish. So on some level, we have to be okay that in our efforts to assert that, it may not go over the way that we want. And to release that outcome, because we can't control it. So we, with as much love and effort to communicate in a way that we can be understood, to try and do that. But at the end of the day, we still have to do what we know is, with our awareness, is going to be most helpful.
Maggie, can you practice saying no? How do you practice saying no?
Yeah, it's hard. I think start with some of the easier things to say no to. You know, whether that's just leaving an hour earlier versus not coming at all. And with people that you know can handle your no. you know, and then work into some of the more difficult ones, recognizing that you're trying to maintain a relationship, you know, and putting that relationship where it needs to be. You know, is this a really important relationship to you? Or does this no matter more because you need to protect your boundary more? But I would, you know, boundaries are tough because other people will react when you do things differently.
Well, I want to thank you both for your time today. This has been a great conversation, and we have run out of time. So Maggie Hallett, Associate Director of Mental Health America of Ohio, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to Lois Stepney, an Assistant Clinical Professor at Ohio State University in the College of Social Work. Thanks again for being here, Lois.
Thank you so much, Amy.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, be sure to listen back at our website, WOSU.org/allsides. Subscribe to the podcast. All of our shows are available to listen to in the WOSU mobile app. And also be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @AllSidesWOSU. And this is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jarovich. Thanks for joining us.